We're now beginning chapter 25 of 1 Samuel. In the first verse, we have the story of Samuel's death. The first verse says, "And Samuel died, and all the Israelites were gathered together, and lamented him, and buried him in his house at Ramah." Samuel was a very great man. He was a great prophet. He was a great judge. He was a priest of God. And though he was such a great man, we find that in his latter days, he was in more or less a state of retirement and obscurity. Not because he didn't have any ability to be active, because he was still the head of this college of prophets that we read about in chapter 19, verse 20. But it was because Israel had rejected him. Israel had rejected him for a king, and God had justly chastised Israel because of this. And at this time then, his desire was to be quiet and to enjoy himself and to be still in service to God, still faithful to God, and to continue to exercise his devotions to God, even though he was in a state of advancing years. He would continue to pray to God for the people and continue to be their servant as much as they would let him. Samuel had begun serving this people while he was still a little child in the tabernacle working under Eli, as we remember. And during this time of his latter life, he was a firm friend to David. He knew that David was God's anointed. He had a hand in the anointing of David. And so he was a staunch backer of David's cause. But he also was equally hated by Saul. Saul hated him because he had dealt so plainly with him. Because he told him he was a sinner when he was. Because he told him that God had plans to replace him with another king. And he hated him because he was a friend of David. And we know that because of this hatred on the part of Saul, that Samuel had fear. He feared for his life. He was afraid Saul would kill him. And this contributed a whole lot to the obscurity of Samuel in his latter life. And even though Saul hated him and would have killed him, he also feared him because he knew that he was God's servant. And he also knew that the people had a great feeling for Samuel. Even though the people had, in a sense, rejected Samuel, they still looked upon him as a great spiritual guide. And so Saul feared Samuel much like Herod feared John, because he was a man of God and because the people had such a fondness for him. And this is one of the reasons that Saul was restrained from doing Samuel more harm. But when Samuel did die, all Israel lamented him. All the Israelites were gathered together and lamented him. So Israel had much reason to mourn at this time. Here was one of their faithful leaders. Here was one of the ones who had been in a lifetime of service to them, who had intervened for them to God, who had continued to do the right thing for them, even though they had more or less rejected him. And so they had good reason to lament, to mourn, to grieve at his passing. They buried him in his house at Ramah. Rather than bury him in another place of prominence, he was buried in the same place that he was born. In his house probably means in the garden that was adjoining to his house. And so after this passing of Samuel, his burial, and the lamentation that the people had for him, then we find that David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. So apparently, being aware of the fact that he's lost one of his most staunch friends, one of the ones that he had been counting upon for spiritual and moral support, one of the ones that he'd no doubt been looking to help him even when he became king, David decides that he'd better get it even further away from Saul. So he leaves the country and he goes into this wilderness of Paran. Now the wilderness of Paran is that area south of Canaan, that's located between Mount Sinai and Canaan. It's a vast, chalky area, and this is a part of the territory that the children of Israel wandered in after they came out of Egypt and before they got to Canaan. And so this was territory that God had comforted his people in before, when they were more or less in a state of being a fugitive. And this was the condition of David. Here David is truly a fugitive, out of his own country, one that he is destined to be the king of, but yet nevertheless one that he cannot even dwell in safely now. In verse 2, we begin the story of Nabal. Now there was a man in Maon whose possessions were in Carmel, and the man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. So this man is a great man. That is, he has a lot of possessions. He's looked upon as being a wealthy man. 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. And he lived in this area of Carmel. And at this time, while David is down in this area, he is shearing his sheep. That is, it's that time of year when he has extra men working to shear sheep. It's kind of a festive time. He will have a lot of extra provisions made for those men. And it's considered to be more or less a time of joy, a time of harvest, for wool was one of the major commodities of Canaan. Verse 3. Now the name of the man was Nabal. The word Nabal means fool. Whether his mother actually named him this, or whether it was a name he acquired later, is hard to say. And the name of his wife, Abigail. And the word Abigail means the joy of her father. But we're going to see that her father probably didn't have too much joy in Abigail's present circumstances because of the nature of this man, Nabal. And she was a woman of good understanding and of a beautiful countenance. And not only was Abigail a beautiful woman, pleasant to look upon, but she also had a good understanding. That is, she had a good head on her. She could pass a reasonable judgment upon a situation. She could grasp the meaning of things rather quickly. So she was a woman then of rather good qualities. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings. So we see Nabal wasn't like his wife. He was churlish, that is, he was rude. He acted like an animal, more like a dog than like a man. And he was also evil in his doings. That is, he didn't have any scruples about doing something that was wrong. He could be dishonest, and possibly some of his wealth was gotten and obtained and retained by dishonesty. And he was of the house of Caleb. Now we see how that he has done dishonor to a great house. The house of Caleb was an honorable house. Caleb, as we know, was one of those two spies when they came back from spying out the land during the time of Moses while the children of Israel were in the wilderness. He was one of the two that came back and gave a good report, Caleb and Joshua. And so when they got into the land of Canaan, Caleb was given this area around Hebron. We learn that Caleb did fight to help obtain this area, but it was his land, his possession, for he was one of the two original adults that left Egypt that was allowed to go into the land of Canaan. So he was a very special person and given a special blessing by giving this territory around Hebron. Well, the city of Carmel and Maon, those areas were not far from Hebron. So we see that this man Nabal, who was a descendant of Caleb, was still living in this general vicinity of the territory of Caleb, and probably his wealth was a result of his having inherited a lot of these things from Caleb. But we see that he was not an honor to Caleb at all, and he very muchly had degenerated from the nature of Caleb and Caleb's house. Verse 4, and David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep. So David heard what was happening. Nabal was having this occasion of the shearers being there. It was, as we said, a festive occasion. A lot of provisions would be made for this. And David heard about it. And David sent out 10 young men. And David said unto the young men, get you up to Carmel, and go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. So David sends some messengers out to Nabal. He sends 10 young men, and he sends them in his name. Now surely everybody knew about David. Everybody knew that David was a person who had given valiant service to the country. He had recently protected a part of this area from the Philistines. And so his situation, his fame, his fidelity to Canaan was well known. And so he says, greet him in my name. And thus shall you say to him that liveth in prosperity. Now here we see Nabal being described as a man that liveth in prosperity. This phrase, in prosperity, has been added by the translators, and it may be that they're assuming that just because he has a lot of wealth that he is truly prosperous. But we know that many times persons with great wealth do not really prosper in the ways that they should prosper. Their soul is not prospering like it should. But here was a man, so far as the material goods of life, did have prosperity. He lived within prosperity. Say, peace be both to thee, and peace be to thine house, and peace be unto all that thou hast. So here now David is approaching him, through his young men, approaching him with a message of peace. Peace be unto thee, and to thy house, and all that thou hast. And as we know, peace is one of the very great articles of humanity. It's one of those qualities that we all need, that we all strive for, that we all want to have. And many times it's so difficult to have. It's one of the things that's spoken about so much in the New Testament. In all of Paul's letters, except the letter to Hebrews, he gives a salutation of grace and peace. Peace is one of those necessary things. Peace is one of the things that our Savior brought. Peace is one of the things that the nations seem to seek after, even though they have armies, even though they're ready to fight, even though they're ready to go to the death. They claim to be seeking after peace. So peace is a much needed thing for man. We need to have peace with ourselves, peace with our own souls, peace with our conscience. We need to have peace with our God. And we also need to have peace with our neighbor, with anyone with whom we have to do. And so David's bringing the message of peace. We do not come in war, we come in peace. And now I have heard that thou hast shearers. Now thy shepherds, which were with us, we hurt them not, neither was there aught missing unto them all the while they were in Carmel. So David further reminds him, I hear that you're having shearers now. I hear that you're having a festive occasion, a special event happening. And I would like to remind you that at the time that your shepherds were with us, when we were in this area with all of our men, we didn't do anything to hurt them. There was nothing missing from them. All the while that they were with us in this area of Carmel, my men could have very easily plundered and robbed and taken from your shepherds. You could have lost some very great amount of goods and value at the hands of my men. David, as we knew, had men who were more or less fugitives. They were discontented. They were in debt. They were somehow or other very happy with their predicament. And so now they were following David. But David reminds Nabal that while we were with you, we didn't hurt any of your shepherds. We didn't take anything that was yours. Nothing was missing from among your articles. And so he says in verse 8, ask thy young men, and they will show thee. If you have any doubt about this, you ask your shepherds, and they will show you how we behaved ourselves. Wherefore, let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. Here we're coming in a time of festivity, a time when you have plenty, and we'd like for you to show us the mercy, show us the kindness of sharing some of your food with us. Let the young men find favor in thine eyes, for we come in a good day. We know that you have plenty. This is a festive time. Give, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand, to thy servant, and to thy son David. So whatever you have available, we'd like for you to give. We're begging, we're asking you for some goods, we're asking you for some help. Whatever you have available, give it to us this day. And he says, to thy servants, and to thy son David. We're willing to be your servants, we're willing to help. We have helped in the past. And look upon me as a son, as a friend, as thy son David. And when David's young men came, they spake to Nabal according to all those words in the name of David, and ceased. So David's men went to Nabal, gave him the message that David wanted him to have, and then they stopped speaking. The message was simply one asking for some help, asking for provisions, for food and water. That's what they wanted. Now notice how Nabal received this message in verse 10. And Nabal answered David's servant and said, who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? So he just simply turns a deaf ear on the plea. I don't know anybody named David. Who is this David? Who is the son of Jesse? He speaks very derogatory toward David. And he further says, there be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. He accuses David of just being a defiant and disobedient servant. He's just broken away from his master, implying that he needs to go back and serve Saul. He had no business of ever leaving Saul to start with. And he also may be casting a reflection upon the men of David, these men who were discontents, these men who were in debt, who were oppressed some way or another. He's probably reflecting upon them also when he says that there are many servants nowadays that every man break away from his master. And what we learn here is that Nabal has no feeling, he has no mercy, he has no intention whatsoever of giving the very simplest of his provisions to help these men that are with David. So he says in verse 11, "Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I've killed from my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? I have no intention of helping. I'm not going to take that that's mine and give to them, and even cause it my water." And as we know, water is more or less something that's owned by everyone. Everyone has a possession of water when it comes to having enough just to quench your thirst. And so the simple things that David asked for are flatly denied by Nabal. And as a matter of fact, he speaks in a very disrespectful manner toward David and his men. In verse 12, "So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told him all those sayings." So it seems that the men of David didn't reply to Nabal. They didn't return railing for railing. They didn't cast any kind of a bad remark back to Nabal, but they just simply turned their way. They got the message. They heard all they needed to hear. They went again and came and told David all the things that Nabal said. "And David said unto his men." Now let's notice what kind of an effect this has upon David. This has a very drastic effect upon David, a surprising effect, since we know David and his character. "And David said unto his men, gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword. And David also girded on his sword. And they went up after David about 400 men, and 200 men abode by the stuff." So David had 600 men, but 400 were now going with him. Each one put on their sword, including David. Now they were going back to Nabal and do Nabal some harm now. They were going to retaliate for the attitude that Nabal had. David is intending to slay every male. He's going to put them all to death. Not just Nabal, but all of Nabal's servants too, apparently. And so we wonder, how can David do this? Why does David have such a retaliatory attitude as this? Here's a man after God's own heart. Here's a man who has been so very patient in the temptations brought on him by Saul. He knows Saul is trying to do him harm, and yet he takes everything Saul has with very much patience and self-control. Here he was expecting Nabal to do him good, and it was a surprise to him when Nabal didn't do him good, and so it had such an effect upon him that David seems to lose his good sense. David's going to do something here that there's no way that we can justify, no way that we can say that it's the right thing to do. But we see that man can be so frail and so weak when it comes to temptation. Oh, temptation can cause us to do things, to think things, to act in such a way so that we're not ourselves. We're not behaving like we should. And so we see here in this situation with David that David's not himself. That's no excuse. That's no reason for David to be justified in what he's doing, but nevertheless, he is doing something that we cannot in any wise justify or say that he has a right to do. Nevertheless, this is the way David did behave. And the Bible, being the true book that it is, tells it like it is. The Bible doesn't hide nor mince the bad things that are done, even though they are the people that are serving God. They are the people that God has a great love for. Nevertheless, when they do something wrong, the Bible tells about the wrong. So we find that this is David's intent to retaliate. And Nabal's camp learns about this. Verse 14, "But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed on them." So one of the servants went and told this wife of Nabal, Abigail, this woman who was so beautiful to look upon, this woman who had such a good knowledge and a good sense, who was of good understanding. And so when she learned what happened, she got the picture immediately. And this servant told her that he railed on them. That is, he used abusive language. He was unreasonable. And he further tells this wife, Abigail, "But the men were very good to us, And we were not hurt, neither missed we anything, as long as we were conversant with them when we were in the fields. She said, David's men didn't do us any harm at all when they were with us at a previous time. When they could have taken something from us very easily, they didn't. They were good to us. We didn't miss anything. They were a wall unto us both by night and day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. David's men gave them protection. He says they were a wall unto us, so that they were probably protecting them from the Philistines while they were fighting the Philistines. And David's men then were actually a benefit to them. And now all David is asking was a return of the favor. Give us some provisions. That's all we're asking for. No great thing, just something to tide us over now while we're in this time of great distress. Here David and his men are in a state of being fugitives. They're in a wilderness area. They are without any means of support. And so they're asking Nabal, in his time of plenty, a man that they had previously helped, a man that they had assisted to keep his provisions when he needed some help, they're asking him to return the favor, and Nabal refuses. And so this servant is telling Abigail's wife how that David's men had done them a good turn, and they just simply deserved better than what Nabal gave. So he concludes his remarks to Abigail in verse 17. Now therefore know and consider what thou wilt do. You got to make a decision. Something needs to be done. For evil is determined against our master and against all his household. He knew what David is going to do. David's coming after him. And evil is going to happen to us. Not only our master, but against all of us, against all of our household. For he is such a son of Belial that a man cannot speak to him. Our master, your husband, Nabal, is such a son of Belial, a son of the devil, that nobody can talk to him. I can't talk to him. And David's men couldn't talk to him. He's unreasonable, and he's going to get us all killed because of this unreasonable, hostile attitude that he has. And so we see this servant turning to Abigail to use some good sense, some good reasoning to get them out of this problem. Well, our time has expired at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.